Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
So hello, my name's Andy Parsons. I'm Union Director at Loughborough Students' Union.
I'm Joe Carr, I'm the President of Loughborough Students' Union.
Since we're not too massive a throng, perhaps we'll all introduce ourselves. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Katie Dean, I'm Associate Dean for Student Experience at the University of Bedfordshire.
Paul McNichol, Dean of the School of Design and Technology, London College of Fashion, which is part of University of the Arts, London. Sorry, very long title.
Hi, I'm Sarah Davey. I'm Director of Membership Development at UPSU, which is the student union in Plymouth.
And I'm Gina Connolly. I'm the Director of Finance and HR at Plymouth Student Union, but I'm currently acting Chief Exec as well.
I'm Sarah Bowman. I'm the President at Plymouth Student Union.
I'm Grant, I'm the Student Engagement Officer for Western College, which has got partner universities of UWE, Bath Spa and University of Bath.
Fantastic. Talking about the question, what are students like? In fact, we talked about various different intonations. So this, Josh is a drama student. I don't know if you want to do a few of those possible intonations. And we found some images. If you Google students, you find a whole host of images of them in various idyllic settings and humiliating poses, I suppose. And of course, there's this image which some of you may have seen, which is of the viral video featuring Joshua Robb.
Oh, yeah, I've watched that.
We thought we'd get that out of the way. And I suppose that's the classic image of students, young, middle class, happy, colourful binders and shirts. But we all know better than that. Students, a whole host of different things. What have we got here? Postgraduates, mature students, ethnic minorities, international students, a whole host of different images and some other things about diversity there. And then there's those student stereotypes. So we were doing this earlier, we just couldn't get that one.
Can you do it? The first couple to me.
Do you know what that one is? Brideshead Revisited. You might remember that. Two blades in the punt there, carrying a teddy around, and then I get that one. And you'll be able to do these.
I know it. Fresh meat. I love
oh,
it.
Oh right, okay.
I love it. I watch it. I admit.
And I think these student stereotypes are interesting. First of all, you got the two upper class toffs there. Then, four boys, wasn't it? Different sorts in the young ones. And a more mixed group, I suppose. Ethnic minority in fresh meat and so on, reflecting the way that students have changed over the years and the way that from being just for the upper classes to being a sort of particular type and so on. And then, of course, we've got other images of students. It's a touching one, isn't it? At least she's falling asleep on her books. These are our students, helping the environment, helping older people, being good sorts.
Our action students.
Have we got any? So, of course, students are all individuals and they're complex individuals. And developing and so on. And that's a really important thing to know. But it's not actually all that helpful, knowing that all students are individual doesn't take you all that far. And the next stage is that you think about students as saying, okay, we've got these groups, we know about international students, we know about mature students, we know about postgraduate students, home-based students. And obviously that's better, but often you still, in the grounds of stereotypes, because what you think about mature students, what you think you know about international students doesn't tell you the whole story. You're in the grand realms of stereotype. So what we started to do is to look at segmenting in different ways. It's still imperfect, but it allows for planning and better communication and slicing and dicing by them. And we did this based on a couple of things, really. A survey based around, in fact, we've done two waves of surveys, based around Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Many of you would be familiar with that.
Yeah.
And to some extent Hertzberg as well, so psychological theory. We developed about 30 questions where we transposed those concepts into the student experience, translated them into the student experience to start to look at how we'd develop those ideas and look for what the hygiene factors were, what were the determining factors. And we also added in some into the mix some data about not just what students say about themselves, but also what students do, because we knew a lot about that. We got how often they came to our entertainments, so we got demographic data on their nationality, address and so on, whether they were participating in our clubs and societies, activities, any offices they held, whether or not they voted in student union elections, and all of that data. And based on all of that, we found some clusters. Initially four clusters, and then because one of the clusters was so big as not to be helpful, we delved a little bit deeper and found a fifth cluster. And then following on from those clusters, and these are LUFBA students, these don't apply nationally, this is just our students, we then held some workshop sessions with the archetypes smack in the middle of those clusters to try and delve more deeply into what those archetypes were like. And from that, we developed
our tribes.
Josh can do these tribes. There you go.
I've heard them so many times. As with Leading Lights, they're our sort of main committee people.
We'll pass these out so you can follow along. They're in our plan. That's a convenient way of doing it. If you look at the back, we've got some questions for you later.
Yeah, so our leading lights there are
right at the back.
They're the ones that are similar to our second tribe, and so they're the ones who are very self-confident, self-assured. They'll put themselves in positions of power. They like to lead from the front, like to get involved in about as much as they can in their university and union life. And then we have our party people, and they're the ones who like to go out and they enjoy a big night out, but they're very much engaged in sport and our fundraising activities and our action activities. Again, you'll probably find these people on committees as well, but just not in quite the leading roles as our leading lights are. Then we have our conscientious carers. At first we sort of misunderstood these. We thought they were more about caring for other people, making sure everyone else is looked after, and that is part of what they are, but they're also very much very self-conscious, and a lot of what they do, they'd be afraid to put themselves in those positions of power in case of being judged, and they're very self-conscious about what they do, but at the same time they like to see that everything is for everyone as well. They care about what other people are concerned about. Then we've got our flow goers. These are they sort of just go with what happens. They've not really found their sort of place in our community. They're part of our group that doesn't have a culture, it doesn't fit into a culture. And so they're sort of less active within the union and less active within the role they take within the university.
That'd be interesting. When we started looking at these, when we were kind of trying to come up with this and putting these descriptions, people said, oh right, less high achieving. Really, are you going to say that about these people? When we did those archetype workshops, these people named themselves, we asked them to name themselves, we didn't actually use any of the names. Their name for themselves was the leftovers. So you get a feel for what that group table, 7 or 8 of them, that's what they felt it was.
And we've got academic individualists, there are intellects. They're often adverse to the Loughborough culture as it is at the moment. They've found their own way into their own culture. So they're more self-confident in themselves. They're happy to just think, oh, the Loughborough culture's not for me, but I can find my own way. But they're also looking to see more of an academic experience, more of a social life around their course, more of a more experiences that relate more to their degree as opposed to the going out and the party, and they want to see more cultured events. Less going out and less partying by the union. So those are our 5 tribes, and we actually found that we had more academic individualists than we thought we did. A large proportion of our students are happy with us, but the proportion that aren't and often oppose us are the academic individualists more so, and they're the ones who are really calling out for more, and we'll probably see improvements in our satisfaction levels if we start catering more to these students, because there's a lot more of them than we thought there were.
I should emphasise, all of these students want to succeed in their degree. That's clear right the way through. The academic individualists are the ones that are in the degree for the subject, as opposed to wanting to... They all want academic success. I thought we'd try a game with you, make it an interactive experience. Which of our tribes do you think fulfilled these 5 categories?
First one is the party people.
Absolutely right. Quite distinct. There's about 10. We did top trumps, didn't we?
Yeah.
To swap it over to help our people get their heads around it. And these ones?
Conscientious.
You got it. Conscientious carers. Very, very self. Self-conscientious carers might be a better name for them. So, looking at some of the cliches.
How do we get rid of that?
Must be part of the TV because it's not on the screen.
I quite like that video. These are the groups by domestic students. So you've got party people, leading lights, conscientious carers, flow goers, academic individualists. If you look at the EU international students, quite interesting. Okay, as you might expect, slightly fewer party people. But we thought it was really interesting, the highest proportion of leading lights of all of them amongst those Erasmus students. So undercutting some of our images of what international students are and wanted and if you think that non-EU international students, and this includes postgrads, are all about, the image that we had in our heads of those international students was they're all academic individualists. And we find that half of them aren't like that, more than half. Different. So it absolutely undercuts some of the cliches that we had in our heads about them. It's expressed in a slightly different way, and again, maybe this fulfills some stereotypes by faculty. But we haven't actually got faculties, but we kind of made it up in a way that did. So, as you might expect, social scientists, time in their hands, party people. but the colours are different for reasons best known to accept. Academic individuals, the blue ones running through that. But you can see that engineers and the red ones are leading lights in this case. The engineers and social scientists form those sort of big groups of leading lights with pure scientists, fewer of them. Just so the way that we started to think about our different groups of students and the way that we start to address them as we start to work what we call to slice and dice those different groups of students gives us a way of doing different things with them. And what we've developed is 5 quick golden questions. I'm told that there are 2,500 permutations, particularly when you put it with the other demographic stuff that we know. And these are the ways that we ask these five questions. We've just sent out a couple of rounds of surveys to ask our students these questions transparently. So we can put them in roughly, quickly into their right boxes. And last year we got about as far as half our students actively and transparently opting to help us do that. And we update, we tend to update every year. So how have we used planning? If you look at these plans, you'll see the way that it's become reflected in the union strategy for how we engage students. Just the knowledge of them being there.
We're trying to change this idea that we're more than just a nightclub now, which is a very large part of our commercial trade, and that's probably why most people see us as more than just a nightclub. But coming from these findings, we realise that because there's so much more portion of students that are looking for that more than just a nightclub, it changes the way that myself and my team plan all of our events. We pretty much tripled the amount of things that we do in terms of non-alcoholic events and pulling people down. It's not pulling them down to one of our nightclub venues and say the bar will be open and you get to network with people that way. It's bringing them into our sort of cafe culture that we're trying to create now and saying in the daytime come to the Starbucks, watch the coffee house sessions that are happening, and all our sort of events work is again starting to change more towards what we can offer students who don't want to go out and get drunk. It's more they just want to go out and sit with their mates and watch a band. Or so the way we're reinvesting budgeting wise and also what my team and what they do, we've really changed the way that we see the union personally, because the majority of my team are leading lights and party people. So we're changing the way we see the union and the way that we see our students as well, because we didn't always mix in the groups of academic individuals. So then we have to put when we're playing the top trumps again, we have to put the hat on and think, what do the rest of the students want? What do they not get out of the Loughborough experience?
And I think it's helped us focus, raise the profile of academic representation. So, number one point in our strategy is to help the university improve the academic and general student experience to make sure it really is the best. And that prominence has changed, it reflects new thinking that's come from this into our planning. And things like understanding that Erasmus students are, you know, great opportunities for us to recruit them into leading positions. Communication, I think, is probably one of the key areas, and our new brand strategy, which is reflected in this, to talking about the role of the student union, always on your side, more than your cause, and targeting life, reflects a lot of that research that I guess you can see the resonance. But what we've started to do is to focus our communication on the right people in the right way, so that we address, so as much what we don't say to people as what we do say to people. So we don't pester our academic individualists with bar offers, but we do write to them with the stuff that we think they'll be interested in. And we try and get and this is so difficult, getting the tone of voice right for the different tribes.
For example, our apostrophe on students union is now the most important thing in the world. When it's missing on parts of the buildings, you spot it straight away, because it's something the academic individuals notice that most others don't. But
it's a conscientious carers and academic individualists were troubled. But we used to spell Loughborough Luffbra, because that's kind of a cool thing to do. The conscientious carers hated it, not spelled properly. The very individualist, hated it, unprofessional. The others kind of... So it changed our thinking about it. And the apostrophe is the other one, the symbolic thing, you know, whether or not we make the apostrophe after the S in Students Union critical. And we, you know, most students don't care, but some students do. And it's that. That's a symbolic bit of thinking that's been transformed by this work. And then, so Josh initiated this bit of social engineering.
We had a bit of a nightmare at the beginning of, well, in summer this year, in that the university had over-recruited, so it's the first time that we'd ever have to put students into houses as opposed to in our halls of residence. And so I'm sitting in the accommodation centre with the ladies up there, and they said, how do we put them in houses where they're going to be happy? Because in halls you can mix them up and say they don't get along with their flatmates, there's 400 other people that they can go hang out with. But houses, it's so much more different, it's a much more close-knit environment and a much more fraught environment. So I said, well, I don't know if you heard, but we've been in this tribe work. And so we decided to put them in the tribes, and it became a game. You can't put the academic individuals with the party people. You can put the party people with leading lights, though, and you can put flow-goers with either of the two. They'll go either way. And lo and behold, it's actually worked. We've had really positive feedback. I was speaking to a student the other day who was in one of the houses, and she's with three leading lights and three flow-goers. And she said, we absolutely love it. Because I said, oh, it's not a coincidence that you all get along, because we've tried you and it's a great social experiment that we're playing with here. But they seem to be really working really well. And the feedback we've had from the accommodation centre is that only one person didn't like their house, but that's because she moved out of the house she was meant to be in and moved into another one, which wasn't her tribe, or wasn't the compatible tribes. So we've had a real like, physical example of it happening, or working. And now it's a good thing that we've taken to the university, and they're thinking, is it something we need to have in our registration process? Do we look further and roll this out so we have this information from the start? Maybe in an academic situation the tribing would be different, but so now the accommodation centre are looking at whether they roll it out into halls as well as a new way of putting people with people that they know they'll get along with, and they won't be, hopefully it'll cause less problems when you have students that don't necessarily get along in terms of personality / their tribes.
So how do you get all this data and communicate them? Is it through your website?
Yeah, we've got the website CRM system is what we use to run it with, and we've got the golden questions. There's a complex about 12 statement algorithm that tribes people, based on their responses to the 5 golden questions.
Is that through MSL? Do
you use MSL? Yeah, it's MSL that we use.
Yeah,
because
we
use it for that, and they're in fact we're switching to NUS Digital very shortly, and hopefully that'll be able to cope with the algorithm. But so that's how it does that, and it drives people into those, and then we can email out to all the different tribes.
But what's important is that once we tribe them, we ask them, does this sound like you? And if not, would you like to retake the questionnaire? And 9 times out of 10 it's normally right. But if they don't, so one guy we had was an academic individualist, but he was like, no, I'm a party person. I mean, it did turn out that there was one part in the algorithm that had gone wrong, because it was something to do with whether he was an international student or whether he was a home student. And then that changes depending on the questions, how he answers the questions. So we give them the opportunity to say no, it's not them, because there is the room for error, but 9 times out of 10, if not more, it's normally pretty correct.
Well, it's not early days, but I wonder if you would anticipate people might migrate tribes whilst they're with you. There might be a party person when they join you and an academic by the time they leave or something.
I think that's quite possible, and we've done it with 2 years of people now, and about I think we found about 20% had changed the way they answered those questions, and it's imperfect, you know, it's better than the Cosmo quiz, but it's imperfect in terms of they reckon it's got about 80% accuracy, the people that developed it with that. What we're really confident of is that based on 2 or 3 completely different sets of research is that the tribes represent, you know, significant groups of our students that we need to take account of right the way across the whole of their student experience. So yeah, communications, when we get it right in terms of the tribing and tone of voice and things like that, we get about five times better click through, just as an indication. Branding, it's too soon to say. Social engineering is very encouraging, and of course it's still early days with this, but I think what it's done to change our thinking has been dramatic.
Can I ask if you've seen kind of a, I know it's early days, but have you seen a growth in your participation rates? So, you know, if you're volunteering or members of clubs, societies, by being able to target and tailor your communication?
Yes, we have, from quite a high base and a general expectation that we will do, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
but
that's
kind of our expectation,
driver,
if you think it comes down to arrogant. I think we cottoned onto this actually through an experience with international students. We used to produce, you'll know that international students, I forget what the new name for it, but we, you know, you used to have to do CRB checks.
DBS,
yeah. Okay. And international students had problems with doing this. So from our volunteering opportunities, we had to extract the opportunities that required the checks and just produce something for international students that were the ones that didn't require the checks. So they were all in the big book, and we produced a book which said international students volunteering opportunities. And the number of international students who volunteered went from 60 to 400. Nothing that was in the book wasn't in the big offer. And that was really the absolute germ that set us onto this, because we said there's something about when you target stuff at people, you tell them it's for them, and you kind of put it not literally in the right language, but when you get that targeting and focusing, it dramatically changes their uptake. And that was the germ of us starting to look for those tribes and do those things. So, yes, we have seen some increase. You tell me what it's attributed to. It certainly hasn't gone in the wrong direction.
Mm. And sort of, this helped with a change in your business model to go into more sort of daytime, say, cafe culture, moving away? Because I suppose, like the rest of us, there's a downturn in the bottom line contribution for your bar, if it's, because that's what we're experiencing, sort of moving away for that. So it's targeting that right people, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely at the heart of that. The further research that said, as we dug into what some of those groups said, they said, we talked about the love of a culture, and the response from some of them was, what culture? Drink and sport isn't culture. And I don't think we really got that before, and so it came out of that research that we needed to supply something that was more varied and more different, and as you looked at the tribes, it was clear what that was. So yeah, and yeah, I mean, there is a shift away from people coming out to drink a little bit, but I mean, part of this also is commercial. We want to target and focus. It's still a big part of our business model. It's a big part of what students say they like about
okay.
What party people and leading lights say they like about Loughborough Students' Union. One of the things is it's a really active social life in a small town. So we would be getting it wrong, and that's part of this, if we stop doing that, what the trick is for us to continue to play that to the students that love it without it eclipsing everything else that we do. And that's been a really key part of the sort of philosophical thinking.
Yeah, we're not trying to change the culture, we're trying to build a counterculture for the others to fit into, so they don't feel like they're on the outskirts, but they feel like they're part of this own... They're still part of something, but it's not the thing that they don't like.
Because it is based on that book, The Tribes, because you recommended it, didn't you? You did an article in Spotlight and recommended it. Is it a book called Tribes recommended?
Yeah, I did something on tribes. I'm not sure I recommended that book. I can't remember. That's partly my age. and it's and obviously this sort of it's based on two bits of research. I suppose one thing I could do is share another bit of research that's completely unrelated in some ways. Something else we found, because we're obsessed with segmentation, we looked at how people respond to their academic experience by tribe. Not dramatically different by tribe, but where it was dramatically different was by academic attainment. And what we found, and this may just seem obvious, I keep saying this to people, but I'm never sure, the people who were most unhappy with their academic experience were the students who had the lowest attainment. So the people who were batting a first 2-1, very happy, 2-2, less happy, struggling with third and below, very unhappy, very, very unhappy, quite dramatically, like 70% compared to 20% unhappy on the batting at first, which kind of said something really important to us about where the university had to focus. We had this conversation about one of the professors said that this varies across our cohort, but they all go to the same lectures. It's not the lectures that are different, it's their response to them. Which says that for universities, the tribes are different. But actually, in an academic context, just giving all the students the same thing is never going to deliver the best possible student experience. And I think that's the big lesson to draw from this. Not our tribes, your tribes are different. Not student extracurricular experience. But the big lesson to be drawn is giving the same thing to everyone won't do the trick for you. And the days when we could be like Oxford and give everyone an individual experience have gone. So somewhere in between those two things, the strategy for institutions is like the strategy that we developed, where you have to do something based on segmentation.
Can I just ask, what questions did you ask?
Partly, I mean, there were about 20 of them, but they were...
They were the main...
There were 20 odd of these.
Right.
They were like this. So things like, I feel uncomfortable around people who are drunk. I want accommodation to be the centre of my activities.
Right, okay.
They're completely varied because they were based on those sort of Maslow things about social acceptability, the things that we thought, first of all, people need security. Then they love and all of those different things, and we worked our way up as the way of developing what the tribes were about. So it's about needs and somewhat about what they did.
Okay. And when did you get them to ask the question? When did you get them
the original to research was 2 years ago in March, I think.
Right.
That was when we were forming the original research and
okay.
tribes, and then following up with focus groups. Following on from that, the first lot of Golden Question people were starting last year.
Okay. Where in the process before they arrived, you asked you.
We've only ever done it once before
yeah,
they arrived,
that
and that was for the that
right, okay.
social experiment,
so
which
the,
we normally do.
Accommodation yeah. centre sent out an email.
Right, okay.
Which I think it was pretty much a week before they gave them their houses, so it was.
Can't see
you,
okay. Thanks.
And our feeling was we shouldn't do that until they had a chance to settle in, generally speaking.
Okay, yeah.
But needs must be the thing, it seems to work.
And do you allocate a different officer to a tribe, or do you all deal with all tribes? Or
what a good question.
We haven't started officers to tribes yet, but in the Sports Development Centre in the university, in their meetings, one of them takes on the role of an academic individualist, and they take on the viewpoint of that in their meetings. So when they're trying to improve their sport for all sort of programme, that's how they've embraced the tribes, to see if they can, because the assistant director of sport or something is really taken by the research, so they're really looking at it that way themselves. But it is something that we're looking towards sort of doing, but there's 10 of us, so we need to double up on tribes and stuff.
Alright.
So. Oh,
but yeah, I mean, I thought that was a very inventive way of the sports development,
mm-hmm.
people really embracing it. And and Josh is getting it quoted back to him by academics, aren't
we? Yeah.
That's so. Good. Yeah. That's good. That's interesting. Yeah.
I'm not sure when we're timetabled to
yeah.
finish.
Thank you for that.
And
is it just what I know it totally ran because you're. Is there any reason you're moving away from MSL, or is it just?
Sorry.
Is there any reason you're moving away from MSL, or are they?
Yes. Difficult to use.
Huh?
It's difficult.
Yeah, because we just invested in it, haven't we? And I think we've had some teething problems with sort of them promising what they said they would do, and then not sort of quite coming up.
I think it
delivering
was,
on time.
I think it was fantastic software about 10 years ago, to be honest, and the. NUS digital, you know, people have used it, so it's much easier to use.
Mm-hmm. Having said that, we've had increased engagement, haven't we, with our website since you've had it?
Yeah. Oh, it's definitely, you need that CRM thing.
Yeah.
No
yeah.
question about that.
You've got the volunteering module. Have you got the volunteering module, an add-on?
Yeah, no. We've kind of paused with MSL, I guess, because we've more or less committed ourselves to going for the digital solution.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, I think we were told to press the button.
Just that one. Yeah. It's still recording. But.
We're leaving to it.
Yeah.
No. On no account press button B. This will delete all and invalidate your guarantee.
That was really interesting. I used to work at De Montfort, so I'm very familiar with the region and the offer.
Oh, right.
And the personality of the offers in the region.
And then
really interesting.
It'd
be very different in the city, university, I'd assume the tribes.
I think that, I mean, the tribes are all different. You know, we wouldn't say use our tribes.
No.
But you... I'd definitely say people need to think that way.
Well, actually, I thought you had a wider spread in the description within your tribes than I was expecting. actually.
You
thought it'd be a little bit more round, stronger, nuclear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that, I mean, I think that was our own.
So which was the fifth?
Sorry?
Which was the fifth? If you had your main four and then you got one more, yeah?
Oh, sorry, it was Leading Lights and Party People.
Okay.
So they, it was hard to split those two. And they played one bossier than the other. That's about the score. And as they dug into them, they found that it wasn't that they saw themselves as leaders, they were absolutely economists. They just liked to say how things were done.
Thank you.
Thank you for that, Andy.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.